This is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of August 16th, 2020. We begin, as usual, with the latest reports from the local public health departments. From the Ford County Public Health Department, Ford County COVID-19 update dated August 20th, 2020. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing 6 new cases. All 6 are related to an outbreak at a long-term care facility. Ford County has a total of 89 cases. Of those, 68 are confirmed and 21 are probable. 65 people have been released from isolation. 22 are currently in home isolation. There are none hospitalized and there have been 2 deaths. Females make up 60% of the caseload, males 40%. There have been 4 cases in people under the age of 20, 13 in people between the ages of 20 and 29, 12 between the ages of 30 and 39, 10 between the ages of 40 and 49, 10 between 50 and 59, 13 between 60 and 69, 10 between 70 and 79, 13 between 80 and 89, and 4 individuals who were over 90. From Iroquois County, Iroquois County is reporting a total of 303 cases, 282 are confirmed, 21 are probable. 243 are released from isolation, 39 are in hospital, home isolation, 6 are hospitalized, 15 are deceased. Females make up 57.6% of the cases and males 42.4% of the cases. And this data is current as of August 20, 2020. Turning to the news in the Ford County Chronicle, our first story is entitled, Gibson City Bible Church hires Conlon Simbalek as new worship leader. Gibson City. Conlon Simbalek is bringing his love of music from one small town to another. Simbalek was hired as the worship leader at the Gibson City Bible Church after interviewing for the job over Zoom and visiting Gibson City in July. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I feel like it's a good fit, Simbalek said. From a small town back home, it's a familiar setting. Simbalek graduated from Cedarville University, a private Baptist university in Ohio, last May with a Bachelor of Arts in Worship. He grew up in Black Earth, a village in Dane County, Wisconsin, with a population of 1,338 at the 2010 census. It's part of the Madison metropolitan area. While growing up in Black Earth, Simbalek said he worked with his worship leader and worked up a taste for music. I've been involved in music for most of my life. I get to use it in church a lot, Simbalek said. It was between him and my mother. They were talking about how I felt about doing that as a career. I didn't really think about that before, but I was like, hey, that might be cool. I decided to study it in college and ended up loving it. It was different than I thought, but I ended up enjoying it and just grew to love it more. As the worship at Gibson City Bible Church, Simbalek will also schedule and train volunteers and help lead worship services on Sunday mornings. That will involve doing rehearsals with them, overseeing the equipment, assessing the worship minister's lighting and sound equipment to make sure they are up to date and organized. I'm excited to get to help the musicians get better in their abilities, Simbalek said. I'm very excited to be able to do that and hopefully bring some organization. Right now, there's not really one person that organizes the equipment and the backstage area. I'm looking forward to bringing some order to that. Our next story is entitled, End White Silence March Set for Friday in Paxton. Paxton. An End White Silence March will be held in the Ford County seat of Paxton from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Friday, August 21st. Participants will meet at Pell's Park at 6 p.m., then walk the sidewalks of Paxton before returning to the park at 7:30 p.m. People can join the march at any point along the way. Participants are asked to bring noisemakers to rattle when cars honk their horns and to bring signs that read, hashtag end white silence. Organizers will also provide signs that display victims of racial profiling. Organizer Matt Harper said the march will support the Black Lives Matter movement. Don't let the movement BLM deter you from doing the right thing. Speaking out against 400 years of oppression is what we should be doing today, Harper said in an announcement for the event on Facebook. For too long, we have been convinced that urban issues do not affect our rural communities. Just because we don't see riot here does not mean that our silence is excused. By not speaking out, we are perpetuating and reinforcing the problem. We also want to highlight that we are for blue lives, but at this moment, black lives matter. March participants are advised to bring sunscreen, water, and snacks, and wear a mask. Next we have, city eyeing leash requirement for cats. Paxton. The Paxton City Council may make it illegal for residents to let their domesticated cats roam the city without a leash. I'm fine with that, Alderman Eric Evans said as the discussion began at the council's August 11th meeting. If I've got to have my dog on a leash, you've got to have your damn cat on one too. Alderman Susan Satterley said she had the proposal listed on the meeting's agenda upon the request of a concerned resident. Satterley said the resident indicated they were having problems, especially with domesticated cats, not feral cats, coming onto their property. The proposed measure is expected to be voted on by the council in September. The council voted unanimously to instruct City Attorney Mark Miller to draft the applicable ordinance language. The measure would amend Chapter 96 of the city's code ordinance. The ordinance already prohibits both dogs and cats from roaming at large in the city. However, it lacks language about a leash requirement for cats, only mentioning one for dogs. Under the existing ordinance, cats found not wearing their required city-issued license tag can be deemed strays and can be impounded. Also, a written complaint by a resident can lead to any cat, whether registered with the city or not, being impounded. A $25 fee is charged per impoundment. Also at last week's City Council meeting, the council voted unanimously in support of the city applying for a $25,000 grant from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity on behalf of the Paxton Public House, a bar and restaurant at 130 South Market Street. The grant would be through the state's Downstate Small Business Stabilization Program, which is funded by Community Development Block Grant. The funds would help the Paxton Public House cover its operating expenses, including its inventory, rent, and salaries, and address the urgent business needs due to the COVID-19 emergency. No comments or questions from the public were received during the public hearing held prior to the council meeting regarding the city's intention to apply for the grant on the business's behalf. The city earlier this year applied for similar grants on behalf of five local businesses. Of those five, two were granted up to $25,000 in fund, while three were denied. Comptroller-Treasurer Tammy Jensen said she received the city's property tax levy information. Things came in relatively where I was hoping, Jensen said. I think there was about an $8,000 difference between what we were projecting in the city's budget and what we actually received the levy approval for. Jensen said the difference did not result in any changes to the budget. Mayor Bill Ingold said the city had received the second installment of Rebuild Illinois funds totaling almost $50,000. Ingold said the funds would most likely be used to complete two projects. The council heard a 30-minute presentation from officials from the Illinois Ready Mix Concrete Association, who touted the value of using concrete overlays as an alternative to more expensive concrete or asphalt road surfaces. The mayor said the city was considering using concrete overlays on future projects. The council unanimously approved an ordinance changing the name of the Paxton Emergency Management Agency back to the Paxton Emergency Response Service. The council made plans to discuss at a future committee meeting the possibility of regulating underground fences that are typically used to keep dogs within their yards. The Council's Licensing, Permitting, and Zoning Insurance Committee discussed the proposal briefly during its August 11th meeting, but made no decision. Ingall said the police department had its speed monitoring trailer set up in town, including on East Summer Street by the Memorial Field in recent weeks. Meanwhile, Alderman Camelin Johnson Anderson told Police Chief Coy Cornett that she appreciated seeing his officers stationed regularly at the entrance points to Paxton, which she said seems to help vehicle speeds low when entering town. The council unanimously approved the sale of a city-owned property at 332 West Franklin Street to an unnamed buyer. After the city purchased the property, which occupies a dilapidated home, it solicited bids for its purchase but received none. As a result, upon the direction of the city attorney, the mayor sold the property to the first person to express interest in buying it. Engel said it was sold for $5,000, while the person who bought it must tear down the house within 6 months of closing as a condition of the sale. Engel said he and Jensen were continuing to work with the city's insurance provider regarding claims that resulted from a city-owned shed being destroyed by fire last spring, along with the shed's contents. Engel said he expects that a new 48 by 195-foot shed will be built this fall, possibly in October or November, after the old shed is torn down. Engel said the city purchased a new stump grinder for $7,000 to replace the one lost in the shed fire. The new stump grinder, which attaches to the city's skid steer, has already been used to remove a stump on Vermilion Street by the old PBL East Lawn School playground, and it worked well. Many more stumps in town still need to be removed, Engel said. Engel said somebody recently stole one of the braces holding down one of the city's metal picnic tables at Pell's Park. A new brace was ordered, he said. Engel said the city may start welding the braces to the picnic tables to prevent further incidents. The council unanimously agreed to waive the liquor license fees for local businesses through October 31st. And the council voted unanimously to rescind an ordinance the council approved last month calling for the creation of a seventh liquor license. Ingold said the ordinance was approved in error. And also from the alderman, allowing wider driveways, taller garages considered by Paxton Alderman. Paxton. Residential driveways could be built wider and garages taller if the city council ends up approving proposed changes to the city's zoning ordinance. The council's License, Permit, Zoning, Insurance Committee met for the second time in a month on August 11th to review and suggest changes to the zoning ordinance, which dates back to 1988. Among the suggestions were changing the maximum width of a residential driveway to between 20 and 24 feet, up from 14 feet, and changing the maximum height of an accessory building on a residential lot, such as a garage, up to 17 feet, up from 15 feet. Committee Chairman Susan Slatterly noted that existing rules for residential accessory buildings have given the city a few headaches in the past. Last month, Zoning Board of Appeals Chairman Doug Higgins wrote a letter to Slatterly's committee advising that the 15-foot maximum height, in particular, does not allow an appropriate height for a three-car garage to have the proper pitch. The existing 14-foot driveway width, meanwhile, does not seem to provide enough room to accommodate proper access to a two- or three-car garage. Aldermen are hoping that loosening these restrictions will lead to fewer variances being requested by landowners to allow them to build larger-than-allowed driveways and garages. Variances require a legal process, including the publishing of public notices and obtaining approval from both the Zoning Board of Appeals and the City Council. The four-member committee made plans to further discuss the proposed new regulations for accessory buildings, specifically during another committee meeting set for 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 8th at City Hall. Alderman Rob Pacey, a member of the committee, said he would like to have the new rules for accessory buildings ready for a vote of the full council at its monthly meeting at 7 later that night. The committee also made plans to discuss at its next meeting making possible changes to the section of the zoning ordinance applying to mobile home parks. Satterley said she has invited a corporate representative for the trailer park on Weaver Court in Paxton to attend the meeting and give a presentation. I have not gotten a definite okay from them, but they said they were going to do their best to have someone come down and do a presentation on some of the changes that are going on at Waverly Court, Satterley said. In addition to reviewing suggestions related to driveways and accessory buildings at the August 11th committee meeting, Alderman reviewed proposed changes to the definition section of the zoning ordinance. It was suggested that various definitions be added, changed, or removed to reflect modern times and the current businesses operating in the city. Satterley suggested the council consider adding the Airbnbs bread and breakfast to the definition for hotels. Although no decision was made, Pacey said the question of whether to regulate such businesses was worth exploring. There's a wide variety of opinions on regulating or not regulating, Pacey said. Satterley also suggested clarifying the ordinance to specify whether underground electric fences, which are invisible fences used to keep dogs in yards, are prohibited similarly to the electrical fences already defined in the ordinance. Satterley said she was wondering if the city council would be interested in taking a deeper look at regulating underground electric fences, perhaps to limit how close they could be from a sidewalk or to limit them to backyards only. Pacey suggested researching other communities' regulations for such fences before moving forward with the topic. Pacey was skeptical they could be regulated in Paxton. I think it's going to be difficult for us to regulate the invisible fence, so to speak, Pacey acknowledged. It's really intended to control the animal, and it's not really intended necessarily for us to be in a position to regulate it. I would rather see how another community has maybe addressed it. Satterley said an ordinance she found online required underground fences to be no closer than 10 feet to a public sidewalk. She suggested her committee consider such a restriction. I think where we're getting problems is residents are running those right up to the sidewalk, Satterley said. Satterley's committee also made plans last week to solicit bids from professional mapping companies for the updating of the city's zoning map. Satterley said she and Mayor Bill Ingold would work to obtain bids and then interview the interested companies. Former Alderman Bill Wiley said he would be willing to assist in the interview process. Now from LODA. LODA board to open bids for water supply tank in September. LODA. The village of LODA is moving closer to getting an in-ground water supply tank to replace its aging water tower. Upon the request of village engineer Tom Overmeyer, the village board last week set a special meeting for 6 p.m. September 16th for the purpose of opening bids for construction. Overmeyer said he planned to put the contract out for bidding this week. He said he had received the necessary permits from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Overmeyer said he anticipated completion of the project by April 2021. The village board initially had decided to pursue the construction of a new elevated water tank to replace its aging one, but the board later found out that there was too little room to build one, so it decided to pursue instead an in-ground storage tank with pumps. Also at last week's village board meeting, Overmeyer said repairs to Jefferson Street had been completed, and the vote voted to pay the bill of $47,308. The bill was originally for $49,240, but the engineer said he had met with the board president, Carol Arsenault, and they agreed not to do the work on another street as planned. The board is going to look into doing repairs to Mulberry and Walnut Streets next year. Arsenault informed the board that the LODA Fire Department had received its permit from the IEPA to burn down a house on Maple Street this fall. The fire department has also requested a permit to burn a home on Mulberry Street, but has not yet had its permit for that project approved. Arsenault said she would look into obtaining bids to coat the park pavilion instead of trying to replace it this year. The board discussed the property lines where the maintenance building is located, and it was decided to have the land surveyed to clear up any discrepancies. Properties targeted for cleanup were discussed. Board members said that it seems most have been complying with requests for cleanup and have been contacting Arsenault to make arrangements to get it done. ERH Enterprises Incorporated, the Westville-based company that is contracted to maintain the water system in LODA, reported that it had collected and analyzed all required water samples and submitted monthly operating reports. The company also said it had serviced equipment, did routine operation and maintenance, and read water meters. The company also did some exploratory digging around the fire station. It was first thought that the basin in front of the station could be tied into the basin that was uncovered by a new line that was not known to exist. ERH jetted down between the two basins and also went south from the basin on the east side of the street. That could alleviate the drainage issues in that area, ERH said. If it does not alleviate the problems, then further jetting or possibly repairs to the south may be needed. The village treasurer told the board that after the fire station had been metered for water usage, its first bi-monthly usage was around 300,000 gallons. Arsenault said a company that had agreed to pay a $350 water service connection fee and to pay $2,500 towards the upkeep of Franklin Street has not done so. Arsenault said she got all the information together from the previous meetings to send to the firm. A sinkhole on the J. Ross property still needs to be addressed and will hopefully be soon, the board learned. And trustee Rhonda Breeden suggested that the park bathroom plumbing needs to be redone. The board will look into it. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of August 16, 2020. Delmar D.J. Barr, Bales Lake. Delmar D.J. Barr, 93, of Bales Lake, Loda, died at 8 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, April 7, 2020, at North Logan Healthcare in Danville. A visitation will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at the First United Methodist Church in Paxton. COVID-19 safety guidelines will be followed. Please bring your mask. A memorial service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Saturday after the visitation at the church, with the Reverend John Houck officiating. Burial will follow in Glen Cemetery, Paxton, with military honors by Paxton American Legion Post 150. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Bob G. Evans, Paxton. Bob G. Evans, 88, of Paxton, passed away at 8:18 a.m. Thursday, August 13, 2020, at his home. Private funeral services will be held, and burial will be in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Paxton First United Methodist Church. Mary A. Wormnest, Gibson City. Mary A. Wormnest, 93, of Gibson City, formerly of Sibley, went home to the Lord at 12:30 a.m., Sunday, August 16, 2020. A mass of Christian burial was held on Thursday, August 20, 2020, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City, with Father Dong Van Bui officiating. Burial will be at the Mount Hope Cemetery in Sibley. Memorial contributions may be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City. Mary L. Thingston, Watseka. Mary L. Thingston, 92, of Watseka, passed away on Monday, August 10, 2020, at Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth. Graveside services will be held at St. Paul's Lutheran Church Cemetery at Woodworth at 1 p.m. on Sunday, September 13, 2020. The Reverend Alex McNally will officiate. Memorials may be made to Calvary Lutheran Church in Watseka or to the donor's choice. Irma Meintz Jansen Steiner, Watseka. Irma Meintz Jansen Steiner, 93, passed away Wednesday, August 12, 2020. Funeral services were held Sunday, August 16, 2020, at the Calvary Lutheran Church in Watseka. Interment followed at Maple Grove Cemetery in Milford. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Calvary Lutheran Church or Our Savior Lutheran Church. Dora A. Arnold, Bourbonnais. Dora A. Arnold, 88, Bourbonnais, formerly of Martinton, passed away on Friday, August 14, 2020, at Presence Our Lady of Victory in Bourbonnais. Private graveside services will be held at Kankakee Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Ark of Iroquois County. Dr. Gregory John DeLost, Gibson City. Dr. Gregory John DeLost, beloved husband, father, and grandfather, died on Monday, August 17, 2020, at his home in Gibson City at the age of 86. Funeral services were held at a private memorial service for family and friends was held on Friday, August 21, with Deacon John Leonard officiating. Interment followed in McCord Cemetery. Contributions may be made to the Gibson Area Medical Office Building Fund in Gibson City or an organization of the donor's choice. We return to the news with a story entitled, longtime pastor in Paxton, moving to North Carolina. Paxton. When Levi Dietrich first came to Paxton in 2005 to begin serving as the senior pastor at the Great Baptist Church, he anticipated staying there for the rest of his life. I believe strongly in long-term ministries. I think they are the most healthy, said Dietrich, whose father Dan has been pastoring the same church in northeast Missouri for 32 years. While he had planned to stay in Paxton, the Lord just made it clear that it was time for us, for the growth of our family, to go to another place, Levi Dietrich said earlier this month. On Saturday, the 44-year-old Dietrich, who led his last service at the Grace Baptist Church, a day later, he and his family, eight kids included, rented a moving truck and headed to North Carolina. With such a large family, a second trip will be necessary. What prompted the move was mostly just, I guess you could say, the growth of our family, Dietrich said. I'm not talking about numbers, but just the opportunities and needed growth for our family. In North Carolina, Dietrich will be leading the music at the Crossroads Baptist Church in Columbus, where his brother Nathan serves as pastor. That's not going to be a full-time position immediately, Dietrich said. So I'm actually, in the interim, going to work in construction with my younger brother, who has a construction business out there. Dietrich just so happens to have a background not only in ministry, but construction as well. Most of the estimated $40,000 to $50,000 in renovations done to the Grace Baptist Church building in Paxton were completed by Dietrich and other men in the church. We added a restroom addition on the back of the building, and the interior renovations we did ourselves, me and several men in the church, said Dietrich. I've done construction pretty much my whole life, he continued. I've worked for other people and companies, and then I've worked for myself some, too. I worked my way through college doing construction. Dietrich, who grew up in northeast Missouri, earned a bachelor's degree in missions from Ambassador Baptist Church in North Carolina. After completing his undergraduate degree, he served from 2001 to 2003 as an assistant pastor at Calvary Baptist Church in Belvidere, Illinois. Then he earned a master's degree in Old Testament studies in 2005 from the same university before coming to Grace Baptist Church in Paxton that same year. He went on to earn his PhD in biblical interpretation from the Louisiana Baptist University and Seminary in Shreveport, Louisiana. The Grace Baptist Church was just 9 years old when Dietrich arrived in Paxton in 2005. At the time, the church operated out of the old Paxton Community Hospital building on East Pell Street. There were 26 people here my first Sunday, Dietrich recalled. The church is running around 50 members now. Dietrich and his wife Carol welcomed the birth of their fourth son, John, during the same week they moved to Paxton. We've had four more children since then, Dietrich said. They range in age from 5 to 20. It just seemed like each time we had another one, it was the right time, and the Lord has always made it possible, Dietrich said. We just liked kids, and it seemed like they kept happening. With so many kids, the Dietrich household is always really busy, he said. The boys especially are constantly working, he said. I mean, they all three mow lawns around town and work in various places. And my daughter, who's 19, is home for the summer. She's got a job and she's working. And the younger ones have had various school activities until the COVID-19. There was always sports and Scholastic Bowl and things going on all the time, so it was busy. We had to make time to have a meal together and sit down and read as a family and so forth. Similar to their father, the Dietrich children all play different instruments. Dietrich himself has played piano, trumpet, and trombone. Dietrich said he will miss the people of Paxton. In 15 years, we've developed some really, really close relationships, and I thoroughly enjoy just being able to be with the people here, and not only the people of the church. I just want the people of Paxton to know how much we appreciated getting to live here. It was a great town to live in. A lot of times, small towns have a reputation for not being very welcoming of newcomers, but Paxton has just been great to us. I mean, the people we've met, our family, they've been very accepting, and we've just appreciated getting to live here. And that's all the time we have for the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.